Okay, I know you hate this. I hate it. When your cell phone battery conks out in the middle of a conversation, I swear, Allison, this is always happening to me. My battery is always low. It's a running joke among my family and friends. So much so that I carry a charger in my purse, just in case. But it's often super annoying to try to find an outlet. And that's precisely one of the issues that new, greener technology is hoping to address, so that we can use solar and wind to charge our phones instead of relying on wall outlets.
I like it.
Yeah, sounds good, right? Two green gadgeteers stopped by the studio yesterday to talk about this concept and lean, green, energy-saving machines. Alan Chachanov is editor-in-chief of the design network Core77.com. He teaches industrial design at Pratt Institute, and he was a judge in the recent Greener Gadgets competition. Jill Fehrenbacher is editor of Inhabitat.com and co-founder of the recent Greener Gadgets conference, which took place earlier this month in New York. Here, she talks about one of the devices on display at the conference. It's called the Hymeny, and it's a portable charger. It looks like a giant plastic lima bean about the size of your hand. Here she describes.
So it's like a little portable windmill. You can charge your phone, iPod, camera, any small device just by having the wind turbine moving.
And how fast does the air current have to be going to get that thing to move?
Can
I just walk down the street?
I don't think you'd be very successful walking down the street with it. I mean, you could try. But I think the main goal of this is, or the main point of this, is that you'd hook it up to your the handlebars of your bike.
And how much does this retail for?
This is roughly, I think, $50, something like that.
What were some of the most innovative things that you saw in the competition?
What really came across was this notion of participation, that if the user actually was involved in creating the energy for the device, then they would sort of love it more and take care of it more and care about the whole sort of premise of the thing. And the winning design, actually, Energar, wasn't even a commercializable product. This was a DIY, a do-it-yourself product that you build an energy meter yourself in a jam jar. It sits between the wall plug and your device, so you can plug a toaster into it and then it into the wall, and it will tell you how much power the toaster's taking, or a blow dryer, which takes a lot, for instance. Or you can plug a laptop and measure that, and especially when a laptop is off, it's still taking power, vampire power, it's called.
What were some of the other trends that you saw in the entries?
My favorite was Green Cell by Theo Richardson, and this to me was really right on. His concept was that you standardize the batteries for all gadgets, for all cell phones, MP3 players, etc. And so you're not dealing with proprietary batteries from different cell phone companies and different consumer electronics manufacturers. That itself is sort of a bureaucratic business, bureaucracy problem. But on top of this gesture of standardizing the battery, he rendered up these vending machines so that you would simply deposit your spent battery in the vending machine and get a new one. And you could belong to this program. There would be a deposit. And so it would really be as simple as, buying a can of soda. And, cans are standardized and the return system is relatively standardized across this country, 5 cents, whatever it is. When we looked at that solution, it pointed to the fact that this doesn't really have to be rocket science, that batteries should be standard and that there should be vending machines. These were greener batteries, I forgot to mention, and that you could actually close the system. One of the problems with sustainability is that some materials and products aren't inherently bad. They're just bad because we can't get them back, because they just sort of disappear into garbages and landfills and they get lost or they get tucked into drawers. This is something that was actually talked about quite a bit in the conference. But if we can close the system, if we can get these things back, and particularly batteries because they're a little bit nasty, then we have a system where we sort of know where everything is. And if people can subscribe to this system and actually use these Green Cell branded batteries, get them from the same vending machines that they give them back into when they're spent, then we've closed the system. We've created a sustainable service, in a way, versus a product design. This is a service design. And to me, that was really, really forward-looking. Yeah.
I imagine when you're walking around in that world, the competition, you got 61 countries represented, everyone's abuzz with excitement and ideas, innovation. What were some of the things, the ideas floating in the ether that weren't necessarily represented in the competition, but there are on the horizon? What is the future, Alan? What kind of ideas did you see that haven't even necessarily been realized, like the most fantastic ideas?
Well, an idea that's very compelling right now is Bruce Sterling's concept of an Internet of Things. This is the notion that, similar to the barcodes that we have on virtually all consumer products right now, and the RFID radio frequency identification tags that we're starting to see show up in more and more places, that when that stuff becomes more and more ubiquitous, really sort of built into the biology or the materiality of the thing, that all stuff will sort of be knowable. You know, he talks about this example where you can Google your toaster. And when
why would I want to do that?
Well, actually, you'd want to do it for many, many reasons. If everything is trackable, then that toaster would know everything about itself. It would know what materials it was made of, so you could compare it with other toasters. It would know what factory that it was built in, and again, it would know the labor practices in those factories. It would know how long it stood on the shelf in a warehouse, that it wasn't maybe so new. For a toaster, that may not be an issue, but freshness might be a very important issue for other kinds of products, services. It would know actually how many times it was picked up from a shelf and put back down in the retail environment and not purchased. I think a lot of people would be very interested to hear that piece of information. And we haven't even gotten to the point where anyone's bought it or used it at all. It would never be thrown away, because if all of its parts were knowable where they were, there would be no waste, because material and parts are always of use to somebody. This kind of utopian view of what might be coming around the bend. There's actually quite a green story to it.
Mm-hmm. Do you think people really want to know that information, though? When you tell me that, I think, yeah. Oh, my gosh. All of a sudden, I have the life history of every appliance in my apartment.
Well,
it seems overwhelming
to me. You choose to know,
too. I think it's kind of a gradual thing, too. I mean, I don't think that everyone's going to want to know every detail about their toaster, necessarily. But, you know, comparison shopping is already very popular. Yeah. People go to, different websites, price.com or whatever, to compare different things to see what's the best price, what kind of review something has. And, you know, then this is just a step in that direction. You know, add some more details, how much you can find out about what
you're
purchasing.
And there's all sorts of information about all sorts of things right now that are floating around that you've elected not to know about. This is just sort of another subset of information. What's interesting about this subset, however, is that it has real consequence, that industrialization and mass production has huge consequence on the planet, on our lives, on our health, on our children, and on our culture. So we actually need to know this information. It's sort of about time that we knew more of this information. And I think in some of the news stories, you're starting to see people waking up to the fact that products create consequence, and that we need to sort of understand whether that's toys that might be dangerous to us, or food that might be dangerous to us, or health procedures that might be dangerous to us. And I think everyone can agree that more information, more knowledge about these things, where we're informed consumers in sort of this sense, we're going to be better consumers.
So we could imagine a time where, like, I would buy a can of chili at the grocery store and look at the calorie content. I could buy a lamp and it would have some kind of meter that would say, if you plug this into such and such, this is...
Sure. And that's not far from what we have now in Energy Star. And this was actually talked about in the conference. Yeah.
And just a point I was going to add earlier is I just heard something on NPR this morning about toys and parents being concerned about lead in their toys and not being able to find out what is in their toys and where they're made. Particularly, you know, in some like dollar stores and things like that, there's no way of tracking where those things come from and what's in them. And something like this would really help with that.
So there's demand. It's not like, oh, you know, here's this information. Don't you want to know? Parents are actually crying out to know. And, you know, markets love when there's sort of they can recognize a demand and provide a service to meet that demand. So I think that this is, in a way, very urgent right now. So perhaps that's next.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Alan Chachanov and Jill Fehrenbacher. Find video of some of the cool gadgets they brought in at our blog, npr.org/BryantPark.